morning, and thank you very much for HAPTRA to organize this session, and really remarkable results which have been presented to you this morning. And you know, I've been involved with the humic. Oops, we're back to no signal. All right, there you go. So I've been involved with the humic substances for almost about 35 plus years. I come from a background of geology and of coal, and I kind of became involved with in trying to solve the problems with coal, and that kind of brought me into the humic substances. And so I'll share with you in this particular presentation as to what is happening, and also its impact on the soil health. And I'll give you some of the, our laboratory research results, but I'll more focus on specific applications at a farm in Gordonsville, Virginia. So my co-author is Mr. Robert Lawson, and he is busy out there in his farm doing the plantings, and he could not be here. But he has been using our product for about more than 10 years, and quite a remarkable farmer who's, you know, taken on a very different approach. But let me kind of share with you from our perspective as to what is happening today. You know, the farmers are seeking increased yield, and but they continue to be challenged with the lower farm prices. You know, about 3-4 years ago, the farm prices really took off, and there was a, farmers were a lot more willing to, you know, increase the input costs. But today, they are, you know, facing a big challenge because the farm prices have come down. And of course, you know, there's a constant challenge with the plant protection chemicals. You know, there's a lot of regulations are now requiring to decrease their use or eliminate their use. And the third, of course, is the nutrient management regulations have gone in place, which are now requiring the farmers to, based on their soil analysis, especially phosphorus index, to decrease the amount of nutrients they can apply. So there's a, on one side, farmers want to increase the crop yield. On the other side, he's being told to decrease it. And these type of regulations are now being also enforced in the turf area. In fact, starting in 2017 in Virginia, all these you know, inputs in turf applications will be also, you know, mandated that they should be decreased. And of course, you know, on other, also the U.S. Department of Agriculture is promoting conservation practices, and there's a, in fact, a huge financial incentives is being given under the program called EQIP. And of course, another big issue, you know, coming is the climate change and leading to the droughts. And you heard in the previous presentations that how the humic products are especially benefit during the drought conditions. Another major trend happening is the increase in organic food production. The demand and profits are more in there. The farmers continue to also face with farm wastes, manures, as well as agriculture wastes. So these are the what's happening. And here's in a photo from the United Nations Food Agriculture Organization. They are showing the what's happening to the soils. And many experts are, you know, telling us that with the population going up to 9 billion by 2050, based on what we have learned since the Green Revolution, you know, those approaches will not allow us to produce the food to feed all the people. So we have a huge challenge. And in fact, in 2015, United Nations had declared International Year of the Soil. So the soils have become a very, very big issue. Here, I'm showing you just kind of a snapshot of some of the, you know, our own test work on looking at the organic matter stat of the soils. These are from some of the farmers in Virginia at different, you know, farms and what they are growing there. Of course, our traditional approach to measuring the organic matter is based on a loss in ignition or, you know, Barclay-Blake method. Many of you are expert on these things. And that still is the standard method which is being used, where a sample is sent to the lab, and they analyze for organic matter as well as analyze for other nutrients. and the organic matter generally comes out high. The last column in this one is here the organic matter has been analyzed for humic acid, basically using the HAPTA method. And you can see that there's a big difference, you know, that when you analyze these soils for organic humic matter, it's almost down to a fraction of a percent or even missing. There's a lot more detailed data is coming out of the Northeastern University. If any one of you are interested, Professor Jeff Davis and his team have been actively analyzing for the humic fulvic acid in the soils from all over the U.S., and they published a lot. And they're showing the same kind of trend which is going on. This is my company, we are based in near Washington, D.C., and we are engaged in many, many applications of the coal-derived humic products in many market applications. Ectosol is the product line for the agriculture application. We have a nutrient enhancer, which is to allow the use of these products to impregnate the fertilizers. We have a product which is being provided in the poultry houses to deal with the, as a disinfectant, ammonia control. We have a solution for the manure. We have a product for Humasor for dealing with the water issue, as well as this product is now being developed for its application for capturing carbon dioxide and other stuff from the stacks and then converting those into water filter. We've also took a challenge to convert the old explosives into a fertilizer, ecto-demil technology, and we built several facilities for the U.S. military as well as other places. And what I was interested in there was there's a lot of nitrogen in there, and so we use this humic product technology as a way to completely make them non-explosive, capture the nitrogen and other components, and it's approved by the EPA as an acceptable recycling technology. So this is our plant. We make these products in South Boston, in Virginia, and from there we ship these products in many different packages to U.S. market as well as overseas. In the Ectosol product, we have our base product, then we have products which we produce with NPK or micronutrients or calcium, or we can formulate any specific products. Of course, these products have been approved. The first approval came from the U.S. Department of Agriculture when they were considering a national organic program. In fact, I tried to form an industry organization in mid-90s, and the interest was to see if we can make a case to the USDA. And so I was in front of them, and there was not much resistance. They quickly recognized that the humic products are useful, and so it was included into that national organic program, which then led to the AMRI becoming the de facto organization to approve the products which will comply to the USDA. So many of the products which you heard this morning are now AMRI approved. We have one of the unique approval we have is from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and this is under the FIFRA regulation to combine this product with the pesticide formulation, fungicide, and these types of products to make them UV protectant, adjuvant, and as well as, to make them essentially safer so you can decrease their use and improve their performance. And our product is exempt from any residue tolerance requirement. We have another, besides AMRI approval, we have approval from the state of South Carolina for use in their many of the state projects as a stimulant. So you heard this morning about the mechanisms, and there are many textbooks written on it, and I have kind of compiled here. So when you saw in previous presentation, and these products are being applied at maybe 1 gallon, half a gallon, 1 quart per acre, so then the user is asking you a question, how this small rate can affect the soil. So it's not at that small rate, it doesn't make sense that it's going to do anything to the soil. So here's what I would, share with you my perspective. And why it was snake oil, because that it could do a lot of different things, because it's operating with multiple mechanisms, mode of actions. So when we apply, the first mode of action is the biological benefits, and I'll show you some data. We have research data to make a case for that, and of course a lot of published work is out there. And simultaneously, it provides certain chemical benefits in terms of being able to chelate nutrients and make them, you know, more easily available. But as you cumulatively apply, then you get the benefits in the soil. So that's what I believe is going on. Because, and the other factor is, of course, you know, to keep the costs within acceptable range. And based on some of the market analysis we have done, you're looking at it, you know, these products input costs are on the low side, $20 per acre, to on the high side, about $80 per acre. So you have to see what is the additional value gain you will have. Because if you try to impact the soil, you need to apply this at a very high rate, and it simply will not be economical. So here's some of the data on, for example, you know, what we have shown, that the humic molecule has ability to bind multiple mineral nutrition. It binds NPKs at a certain lower level, you know, about 35 to 50%, but it has a much higher binding capacity, chelation, ion exchange, you know, with the micronutrients. So I call these humic molecules to be the proportional release, because you need plants to have certain fast available nutrients. At the same time, you want to sustain it so it can provide them in a sustained way. So this is the data which supports that it's a product, because there are many products which are sold. They are, you know, called slow release. You know, they just, you know, hold the nutrients and they make them available at a very, very slow rate. Whereas when you combine these products with the humic molecules, they do it both. Second, it does is it improves the soil structure. This second graph, where we have taken a soil samples and we did this test using a rod penetration, and you can see that when you apply Ectosol or any humic acid products, you take a very compact soil and you, you know, put this humic on it, you will see that very within few days it will agglomerate the soil. So it's improving its tilth. It's of course increasing the water holding capacity because of this unique molecule structure. Many of the scientists are still arguing about it, but it is the latest, I guess, model which I continue to be convinced that that's to be the case. It's a helical molecule. It's hydrophobic. In fact, if you take a humic products and do a Draves testing, which is you put these cotton strands, they stand there for hours or days. It's a very hydrophobic product. And but inside this molecule, it has a water holding, or it can hold. It's a hydrophilic inside and hydrophobic outside. So it provides the both ways. It helps to hold the moisture, water molecule. At the same time, it's also challenging to make it, you know, hydrophilic. So that's why I'm in favor of including the hydrophilic products as a part of this whole package, because that they play an important role. The other, you heard from previous speakers also that, you know, in fact, when you increase this into the soil and you count the microbes, and you see a increase in the number of microbes per unit. Now, what is the mechanism? You know, we talked about that, and really this is something which finally gave me that answer, and this work was done by Dr. Mellis at University of California, Berkeley, where he tested Ectosol on the growth of the algal cell. And of course, you know, the minus Ectosol is the growth with the Hoagland solution. Hoagland, if many of you are scientists in this audience, is the richest and the most optimum nutrient solution for growing any kind of plant cells or animal cells. And so, but when you add Ectosol to it, and you can see the substantial growth, and then you add additional magnesium sulfur, calcium, and iron, you see a big growth. So the mechanism which is going on here is that humic molecule is the most effective electron shuttler. And that's why when we apply this even at a very small rate, we see a big increase in the root mass. At the same time, we see an increase in the top growth. That's what we believe is going on, and this data supports that. And we have done a lot of other research to utilize the humic molecule in stimulating the microbial growth in many ways. Here is a data where we're showing that how the humic molecule increases the uptake of these micronutrients. You know, the control, which is just in a soil, and this middle one is a where we have a solution of these nutrients, and then we analyze in the tissue samples, and the last one is when it's chelated with ectosol, so you can see the increase in growth. Here, this is based on a field trials where we compared the ectosol, where it's been used to impregnate granular fertilizer, like urea, diammonium phosphate, muriate of potash. The two common chemicals which are used are NSN and AVAIL. NSN is used to impregnate or coat urea. AVAIL is used to coat diammonium phosphate. And these two chemistries, they're incompatible, so you have to do separate urea, you have to do separate diammonium phosphate, and then you have to bring all these together and add muriate of potash, and you create a common product which is sold and, you know, provided to the farmers is about 20-20-20. So we compared this. You know, our product, you can do it in one step, and you can see that based on the tissue analysis, our nutrient enhancer is the purple color, and the product which was made with the using an NSN as well as a whale, you can see that the big increase was in the phosphorus. But there's still people are questioning that what is the mode of action of a whale? Now, the mode of action of the humic products in increasing the phosphorus uptake is that humic acid holds the calcium. Because most of the phosphorus which is made available to the plants, whether it's in the soil, is in form of some sort of a calcium phosphate or some other form. And so the humic molecule, because of its high chelation capacity, holds the calcium and it makes the phosphorus available. So now we come to the soil issue. So what, you know, when we look at the experts who have been studying this on the soil health, there are a number of factors, you know, regulating health, plant, animal life, filtering. And I have only 4 minutes, so I'm going to rush through and cycling nutrients and the supporting structure. So this is Mr. Lawson at his farm, 900 plus acres. He, about 10 years ago, he decided that he's not going to use any granular fertilizer. And he's not going to follow the no-till practice. He's a big fan of using tilling process. And I can go to his farm today after he's been using ectosol and along with his liquid, you know, based products. I can dig up the soil with my bare hands down to about 6 or 8 inches. In the other areas, you can hardly scratch the soil because his soils were, he said, you know, pretty much red clay soil. And he had a huge problem in a lot of salts built up. So he measured the organic matter based on your standard soil, you know, soil quality or the index, which is a qualitative measurement. So what he has shown that he has increased from a unit of 1 to about 5 over these years. Second, he's been able to increase average of from 50 bushels per acre to almost double it to 100 bushels per acre in case of wheat, tobacco, as well as corn and sorghum and a number of these crops he's using. So here is when he analyzed his soils, what he's been able to determine that there's a huge amount of nutrients are in reserve. Whatever he's applying, they don't lose. Nitrogen reserve is almost average is about 150 pounds per acre. And there's about 10 to 45% increase in his phosphorus and his nutrients. And I've given, what are his inputs? He's only applying 60 pounds of nitrogen, about 15 pounds of P2O5, about 10 pounds, and you can do this calculation. But this is per acre for whole year. And he's producing a crops which over about 2 seasons, these are on the tobacco area. So he has improved the soil health, but he's creating a 30 times more value in case of tobacco, about 12 times. And he's able to improve the soil health in about 18 months, whereas compared it has been taking about 5 to 10 years. This is an example from Egypt. You know, again, I don't have time, but you can go on my website and you can see a lot of information about, again, 10 years of work, showing increase in yield, decrease in the amount of chemical fertilizer usage, and a big multiplier on the cost savings. So I'll be happy to give you any further details, but I'm quite excited about what we can do. The other point I want to share with you, that why you all should, you know, consider this. The humic substances are the fourth largest storehouse of the carbon in our planet Earth, and we're losing it. And so we need to, you know, because to deal with this our carbon issue, soils can play a huge important role, not only for carbon sequestration, but at the same time helping increase the crop yields, quality, and all of those issues. Thank you very much.
Maybe one quick question.
Sure.
The nitrogen that you apply, is it urea or gas?
Yeah, it is a urea solution. So for example, the 60 pounds of nitrogen, it's combination. Some is coming, mostly is coming from a urea solution. He's using a liquid. There's no granular fertilizer on his farm. Everything is in form of a liquid products.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Damon, again.
All right.